listening to Justice Radio on WMPG, and this is the Young People's Caucus's monthly Youth Justice segment with your hosts, Liv and Swathi. I'm Swathi, and today we're interviewing Emma Schwartz about Regional Care Teams, a network of individuals from youth-serving agencies, systems, orgs, and communities who meet monthly to share resources and respond to the local needs of youth referred to the initiative. So we're going to hear more from Emma Schwartz about that. To start, we'd love to hear about who you are, and yeah, anything you want to share about yourself and your relationship to youth justice work.
My name is Emma. I currently work with the Place Matters team, which is housed at the Katherine Cutler Institute at the University of Southern Maine. So that's my formal connection to youth justice work. I work on a number of projects in my role. One of them is the Regional Care Teams project, but do a lot of other projects that are about some applied research and just broadly using data and storytelling to make a connection between where things are right now to kind of measure how things are going in the justice system statewide, and then lift up voices for ideas about where we want things to be. And I say that's kind of like my formal relationship with the justice space, because I think it's also important to name or like for myself that I grew up in Portland in Maine, and I went away for undergrad and then came back, and I think like being really connected to this place is a big part of what motivates me and like brings me to this work and thinking about how Maine can be like a better place for everyone.
Thank you for sharing that. We're glad to have you back in Maine. And thanks for like teeing up the regional care teams. So like, we're here today to talk more about regional care teams, as they are an initiative that's meant to support young people impacted by the justice system, which is our focus on this show. So we'd love to start with just, what are regional care teams?
I always feel like they're tough to explain without a visual, so I'm excited to share a little bit about what they do. The Regional Care Teams is a collective impact initiative, meaning that there's central organizations, us at Place Matters, a partnership with Department of Corrections and with folks from the Center for Youth Policy and Law, coming together to really facilitate aligned contributions from other system partners, so state agencies, providers who work with young people impacted by the justice system, as well as community-based organizations statewide. And we facilitate a monthly meeting with all these professional partners in each of the three Maine Department of Corrections regions. So the region one is kind of in southern Maine. Region two spans from mid-coast Maine to central Maine to western Maine. And then region three are the northern and easternmost counties. And really the idea of the regional care teams is to bring folks together to respond to referrals from young people in community, and leveraging the kind of shared partnership and shared knowledge, and also breaking down kind of the silos that unfortunately naturally exist in state government and between systems and community-based organizations, sort of come together to problem solve around a young person and ultimately leverage resources to keep them in community. So there's a very kind of like practical role that the regional care teams plays, right? We receive referrals from anyone who's working with a young person, including young people themselves, or parents and family caregivers can refer to the regional care teams. And we'll do kind of a monthly case review around the referrals that come in. We also have some flex funding available to fill a gap, basically just like money and resources that are easily accessible to like meet emergency needs, which has had a pretty big and positive impact on the youth referred. But we also kind of have this bigger, I think, goal, which is kind of breaking down those silos, really fostering collaboration statewide among our partners, and then also identifying gaps in the continuum of care, using like all the data and discussions that come out of our meetings year round to really clarify a sense of where are there opportunities to keep young people in community, where are resources missing, where are there barriers, and really hearing from people on the ground to get a sense of that. And then, you know, hopefully lifting up those recommendations to bigger decision makers, you know, through our kind of collective voice.
Amazing. Thank you for naming sort of the like direct impact on youth lives that RCTs aims to have, and also some of the systems change impact that RCTs aim to have. I'm wondering, just to like build out our picture of RCTs a little bit more, if you could just share, like, obviously de-identified, an example of the kind of thing that a young person might get referred for, and like the potential for what happens in the RCT space for that young person.
That's a great question, Swathi. I'm thinking of we get referrals for young people in the transition age youth. So that can be like as early as age 12 and all the way up to, you know, 21 and 24. So like above legal adulthood. I'm thinking of a case review that often happens or we've seen is there's a young person who is like disconnected from like natural supports, might also be, you know, in a precarious housing situation and needs, I'm thinking of like one in particular that happened this year, but like really needs to like some, their housing unstable, but they were like really looking to be stay connected to things in their community, like employment, you know, like pro-social activities, and simultaneously like may also have some needs for mental or behavioral health care. And so I think sometimes what happens is like there's only focus on like the housing or the mental behavioral health care, even physical health care, when those like aspirations for work or school sometimes like fall by the wayside, especially if like a young person's a little bit further into the system. And I'm thinking about one case review we had recently where the young person like came in, was having some of these challenges, and we were actually able to connect them with flex funding to provide short-term housing that allowed them to relocate and find a job and get connected to some more stable supports. And that was all led by their needs. Like, we didn't get into like their whole charge history. A discussion around needs, I think, is really powerful because it allows for the group to like to think about where they might be able to respond. And, you know, certainly some parts of their history of involvement with different systems comes into play, but it's not the focus. It's more about what's the information needed to like move forward or to get you closer to your goals or to connect you closer to, you know, the opportunities that you're interested in.
Thank you for walking us through that example. And I know from just experience of having referred young people to the case review process and also the Flex Fund process, so grateful for the Flex Funds. And those are like not easy to access in lots of places to like be able to get, and grateful for like this holistic view of a young person's well-being, because I know we like have been able to get a young person a camera, because that is something that they are really, really interested in their like sort of extracurricular life, and also potentially to like monetize at some point. But it's like something, I think, to it's meaningful to have this like opportunity for holistic well-being conversations and then funding behind it. And also just one thing this reminds me of, and then I have a next question for you, but former colleague Mara Sanchez, I remember like very early on in my time working here at the Institute, she told me that like the resource and service landscape for young people in Maine felt a lot like a buffet, where like you go to one place to get your like buffet ticket, and then you go to a whole other place to get your cup, and then like a whole other place to get to like the fountain drinks, and then a whole other, like basically like there were these things that exist, and it was like on a young person to piece them all together. And so I think that's also really resonating, is like this attempt to actually have adults and service providers piece this, and like systems partners piece it together, because it's really hard for individuals to do that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that visual or kind of metaphor. Then, because I think that another like benefit of the space is like that siloing for young people is like also felt, obviously to a lesser degree, but like it's also felt by the adults who are running those different organizations, you know, the adult who has the cup and has the ticket and has the, you know, mashed potatoes. Like, I think that one of like the other positive outcomes of this initiative, and it's ongoing work, but like is to get people in the same room to like see the folks that they may interact with. Like, they may be having these kind of like cross-sector meetings outside of this space, but I think like this unique mix of state representatives, advocates, providers, and community-based organizations, like that's what kind of like makes the regional care teams stand out, and it fosters those connections. It makes them stronger, and through that, ideally, you know, without making any more significant like policy or statute change, it makes that experience for the young person smoother as well. If the one stop knows where the rest of the stops are, then they can help navigate that better. So I guess that theme of navigation is really there all the time.
You're listening to Justice Radio with Liv Swathi and Emma Schwartz discussing regional care teams. Well, what you're talking about here are wraparound services that meet basic human needs, which in the social work world is a conversation that's had frequently in social services and in clinical social work settings. It's a baseline conversation. But the fact that we're working at a policy institute, having these conversations about wraparound services while in tandem working with policymakers and the Department of Corrections is really hopeful and important that these will be more integrated into all kinds of work that we do.
I think like something that's maybe like important to clarify or name is like the role that I play, and like my colleagues, Jill Ward at the Center for Youth Policy and Law, and then Amen Cabral, who works with us at the Institute. We co-facilitate with Department of Corrections folks in all the regions. And like our role is like, you know, we're policy people, we're conveners. And then I also like play the part of collecting the information and analyzing it and measuring it so that we like can talk about the impact that this initiative is having, but then also those like bigger policy themes. And I think like I really see my work as creating the framework for people like most impacted, and as well as that kind of like second tier of like people who work with young people to like hear what they're experiencing, make sense of it, and like lift it up in a strategic and meaningful way. So I feel very lucky to be in that role. And I almost don't really feel like an expert. I feel like a vessel that like holds the other expertise and like translates that. So that's how I approach this initiative and my other work.
Thank you. And that's a great transition into what we'd love to hear about next, which is like as that convener and vessel and like synthesizer, what are some trends that you've noticed over your time working with regional care teams?
One of the things that we track, we actually ask folks to fill this out on the referral forms, are just like the needs, the expressed needs of the young person. And they've always, the ones that have always been like at the top, a quick pitch to our dashboard, you can actually like look at this visually online. The trends are always around like family and relationships. So, you know, I think that indicates with young people who like come into contact with systems, that's happening because there is a challenge in their natural support system. And so that's always number, like at the top. Housing is also a huge challenge. I mean, I think we all are impacted in this state by rising costs of living, and housing is a big part of that. I think another one, though, that recently like jumped to the top and wasn't always there is transportation. We get a lot of funds requests for driver's education. I think that there are barriers around accessing a transportation for young people in rural places, which is like many parts of the state. And I think like that stands out to me because I think it's transportation, like not just for its own sake, but to get to work, to get to school. And so it's nice that this initiative has been able to help with that. But I think it points to like a need for more substantial support from different systems and from the state to lower those barriers for drivers' education. Yeah, and I think I guess another trend that I noticed like from this initiative is providers always talk about long wait lists and the challenges accessing like services that are much needed for young people. And I think there's an opportunity with the Regional Care Teams initiative to kind of do what you're talking about, Liv, in terms of like the wraparound support and like think about when a young person like, you know, sometimes there's a need to like have some respite from family and go to, you know, a residential service. Some of the young people we see coming to the Regional Care Teams initiative, like are transitioning home from Long Creek. And I think like this initiative represents, we've been able to really support with some of that thinking of transition planning and like what's going to happen afterward. And that's really like heartening to see that. And I'd love to see like more of that going on. These are like really, yeah, there are a lot of challenges like navigating systems and like getting young people like the help that they need to like keep them on those like opportunity pathways. And I think like taking that long-term view and being like, how can we build in support? How can we creatively think about like what their whole needs are and like how the community can like be a part of that? Like really being able to like push back and ask about that, even in the more like challenging cases, has been like something that this initiative has done well. And I think that, I guess that just connects back to a trend, which is like, I think this is like the direction I see a lot of the work like going in and being pushed in, and that's exciting.
I think the other thing here is that you're speaking to a lot of things that social workers or people on the ground or youth workers are experiencing every day and really impacts their work, but they're too burnt out to or don't have the resources to be able to engage in the kind of research and reporting that you're doing that allows for this macro level change that would bring about funding opportunities.
Thanks. I mean, that is like the collective impact model is like, there's a backbone organization that like sort of provides that, we're a knowledge hub and resource for best practices, like keeping those reminders going. There are a lot of, workforce is always a challenge. I mean, that's another trend, I guess, that I'm noticing. But yeah, and I guess I'll finally say, like, the initiative started off being, like, I think very adult, heavy, like, systems heavy, and it needed to be, like, you know, we wanted to break down those silos and, like, get people bought in, and we've been able to do, like, really great work through that, but we're really focusing now on, like, how do we incorporate more youth and family voice, like, into the initiative, and how do we, like, include more young people and families So that's like, I guess, a trend within the initiative itself, but also I just think like really underscores like how the need for like good frameworks for like youth decision making, like in initiatives that are focused on them, is like, it's just so important. And I see a lot of really great like momentum around that in the state, but want to see more.
Yeah, thank you for naming that, because I was thinking as you were speaking, Emma, too, about like part one of the layers of systems change that y'all are doing is like that y'all are aiming for, I imagine, is shifting mental models, right, for like the people who are in that space and also the people who like receive this information about RCTs, about like deservedness, I think, for young people and especially young people who have experienced the carceral system, who are often like blamed for that experience and like have really different access to resources than most other young people in the state. Anyway, I say all that to say like it seems, I think part of what we think about a lot when we're trying to figure out how to support youth voice in those spaces is like, are we bringing them to a space where adults believe that they deserve support, you know, like that's like a sort of a necessary condition for a young person to be safe in the space that they're entering, for a young person who's like experienced the carceral system and maybe been like sort of blamed or told to internalize that responsibility a lot. So that's all to say, it seems like I'm interested in that like sort of process of building that together as an adult group, as like a systems partners and community-based orgs group, and then kind of creating together that readiness to integrate youth and family voices, which sounds like part of the process that y'all are on.
Yes. I love what you're bringing up. I think what you're getting at, Swathi, which is like adult spaces like need to be ready to like be shared with young people. And like that, I think we've been on our way there, just like by the structure of how the regional care teams go, like strengths-based. And I think like, you know, there are a lot of different like people in the room, and I think that there's an expectation of like how to approach that space that's been created over the years. And so, yeah, I guess I'm excited to like be in this place of finally being like, okay, I think it's ready to be a little bit more open and more inclusive, in the way we want it to be. So I'll pause there.
Sweet. Yeah, more to come on that from all of us as we work together in that world. I'm curious, Emma, before we have sort of a closing question around questions that you have for young people, but before we move to that, is there anything else that's on your mind that you want to share that we didn't get to touch on?
Well, I just got back from the OJJDP, Office of Juvenile Justice, Delinquency and Prevention conference in DC, which was a great opportunity to learn from practitioners and leaders, you know, nationwide. The theme of the conference was the continuum of care, which I feel like we've talked a bit about like in this discussion. You know, that's like the continuum of care is like the basis of the Place Matters work, and like some of our design informed, you know, the design that was used by OJJDP at the conference. And so that was really cool to see. And I think it just is making me think about, and this connects to the regional care teams too, like really just the importance of like clearly defining what that continuum looks like, building on what's working well, and like hearing from young people about like what missing or like what they need, and then like using our adult vessel framework to like think about how that translates into like this framework that's about, you know, investments and sustaining resources for young people. So I think there's like a really nice, we have this opportunity to be that bridge and to really like make some real investments in the state. And there's a lot of national momentum around that too. So, and regional care teams is part of that, as is other work that I'm involved in. And I'm just thinking a lot about that connection.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Emma, for this and for your work. We're going to move into one final question, which the intention of this is part of what we're hoping to do with this radio show is kind of alternate with these conversations with adults who are working in the youth justice space and then conversation directly with young people. And so in order to like kind of keep that feeling like a conversation, we're curious what two questions you have for young people in Maine.
I love this question. I think the first one is like very broad and maybe a little selfish because I'm kind of looking for this right now, but I'm always like, and it's a question for everyone, but I think especially for young people, like, I just want to know, like, what are they doing for fun right now? Like, what's bringing them joy? You know, from like a policy perspective, when you ask about this, it can like often reveal what those strengths are in a young person's life and community, that can help form like a useful definition of well-being. And well-being is like a measure that we use a lot, to demonstrate impact. And I'm really interested in like ways that that can be more reflective of like how young people define well-being for themselves. And there are a lot of really cool projects working on this. So that's sort of like my policy hat for that question. But I also just think like, it's a question that I don't get asked enough. And like, I would love to like ask of other people, like, yeah. And I don't know, maybe like teenagers might think that that's like kind of corny, but if they're willing to indulge me, I think that's a great question. And then my second one is just like, what does it take or what would it look like for like adults to be better listeners of, yeah, to you? Maybe this is like a two-pronged question. Like, when's a time that like you really felt like you had a voice in decision making and shared decision making with like an adult? And like, when's a time that that didn't happen? And like, what do you wish had gone differently? Yeah, I think like there are so many prejudices against young people for, you know, being able to like make decisions about themselves and about like things that impact them. And while it's like really important to acknowledge like, yeah, young people are at a different stage developmentally, like they have a lot of wisdom. And so I think it'd be great to hear from young people like about how that functions, you know, in their life. And yeah, I think I would learn a lot from that. And I think others would too.
Ooh, I love that so much. And that feels like a conversation that could be intergenerational, you know, like we all have experiences, whether we're thinking back to our young adulthood when we were like invited into or not invited into decisions. And like, I can feel so viscerally right now when you ask that, like the feeling of like someone else having decided for me and like the long-term repercussions of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much, Emma, for this conversation and for your work on RCTs.
Thank you guys. This was amazing.
Thank you for listening to Justice Radio. Tune in next month when Liv and Swathi answer Emma's questions with the YPC media team.
And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.